Yeah, but people might call in early and I have to verify everybody's stuff, so. I took him out for a walk around 5. And I had a quick cat nap of probably maybe 15 or 20 minutes, which felt very refreshing. I also turned the air conditioner lower. So it's good now. Hello, who's this? Hi, who just joined the call with the 214 area code?
Hi, this is Dan Brown joining.
Dan, what's your last name?
Brown, like the color.
Okay, let's start all over again. I'm not seeing the little thing. So your first name is Val?
Dan, D-A-N.
Oh, D-A-N, okay. Thanks for helping me slowly. Okay, and your last name?
Brown, B-R-O-W-N.
Oh, just like it with sounds. There's a little bit of an echo behind you, so I apologize for not hearing. Well, welcome. You and I are the first. No, actually, that's a little worse. I think it's just the nature of the beast.
I should be listening, Lisa. Thank you for that.
Oh, it's not a problem. This is Amy Granite. I'm the managing director. So I'm assuming you're the Daniel Brown with the Brown Daniel G at gmail.com.
Yes,
email ma'am. Address. Okay, great. Let me just check these things. Thanks for joining us. It should be a good call. I hope everyone doesn't come in one time because that would make it hard. Where's the 214 area code? I don't recognize it.
It's the Dallas area. I moved here about 5 years ago.
I lived in outside of Houston. I lived in Houston for 5 years, and I lived in Conroe for 5 years. So,
oh, very cool.
Two of my,
we were in Grapevine, Texas for about 15.
Yeah, two of my kids were born Texans, whether they want to admit it or not.
California is by naturalization, huh?
Well, you know, once you live here for a while, it's sort of gets in your blood.
Yeah, it grows on you a little bit. I'll give you that.
Yeah, you're sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't. I know that sounds fatalistic.
Oh, it's just a great place to be. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. I don't have any plans to leave. All right. Trying to figure something out. So what do you do in Dallas?
I'm sorry?
What do you do in Dallas? Anything interesting?
Oh, I live in Livermore now. I moved from Dallas.
Oh, you're in Livermore. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm a big Carnegie supporter, so I'm out here trying to see what's going on with them and make sure they're taking
yeah.
care of them.
Oh, always. We don't know yet what is going to happen with the bills, the Carnegie bills, the I should say anti-Carnegie bills, yet whether they're going to be allowed to go ahead in this legislative session. We think there are three of them, and we think at least two aren't. But, you know, they can attack us from any sides. As a Carnegie supporter, I'm sure you will know.
Oh, yeah, I'm very familiar.
But that's one of our things that we keep closest watch on. All right.
I'll be right back. Thank you so much.
No problem. Hi, Jared.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I am in a nice air-conditioned room.
Well, that's cool. That's the way to do it.
In other words, it's really hot in Sacramento.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a good thing for air conditioning, right?
I'm sorry?
Good thing for air conditioning.
Oh, yeah. No, I honestly don't know how people live here without it.
I don't either. Well, we live near the ocean, so that helps us tremendously.
Well, you know, I'm from Carmel. That's where my family is.
Yeah, you're right there on the corner from us then.
Yeah, no, I when I met my husband, I met him at Hollister, and that's because that was the closest place to go wheeling from Carmel.
Oh,
and he went wheeling there too because he was living in San Mateo, so it was kind of, we were right in between. And then a bunch of stuff happened. He got a job offer and things happened, and moved to Sacramento, and the weather.
Yes,
took
a little
years.
Bit.
Years.
A little bit
to get
information. Yeah. Difficult from going from Carmen.
It was for more than ways than one, but Sacramento's come a long, long way. And if I didn't move here, I wouldn't be able to do what I do now, because you really have to live in Sacramento to have influence. And
yes. And you have all the cool rivers and lakes and stuff over there. We have very little over my area.
Yeah, we do have. I'm right near the American River and American River Parkway, so we take the dog on there.
Yeah. Yeah, we really like that area.
Literally, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Oh, you're close.
Hello, hello.
There he is.
Ken.
Hey, Ken, well, I'm hoping not everybody comes on at one time.
Yeah, I've just thought about that. That can be quite a rush.
It could be. There's Lori.
Hello.
Hello, Lori.
How are you guys?
Lori's going to help out and take whatever notes you think need to be taken, Amy.
Okay, Lori, the notes that need to be taken would be specific questions that people have that we don't have time to address because we only have 2 hours and a lot of material to cover. So when somebody says, you know, I want to know X, Y, Z, just write it down into whoever, you know, say it's directed towards, and then we'll put together an email and, you know, say these are the questions that were asked. Can you give, because we have 3 special guests coming on, but it could be to the board, it could be to me, it could be to Ken, so you'll figure it out.
Okay.
And there's Robin, and there's, who's with the 805 number that just came on?
Mervin Clark, Plant Review 4x4.
Is that Mervin?
Ruben, R-U-B-E-N.
Ruben. Oh, it's Ruben.
Yeah.
I am having the hardest time understanding people.
Ruben.
Jared.
Jared.
Hey, Jared.
Hey, Jared.
Jared.
Hey, Mark, hey, Jared. If you want to put down Mark Fogarus.
This meeting is being recorded, so I'll tell you what else you can do is you could put down the names as I read them out. That would help.
Okay.
A lot.
Amy, do you want to just read the names of the guests rather than have them introduce themselves?
In the beginning, we'll do as we always do, is I'll read the guest name and the board member names.
Okay.
So, there's Spencer Norton, Debbie Campbell. Hey, Debbie, it's nice to hear hear you on here.
Hey, Debbie.
Hi.
Brian, I've got you too.
That is me.
Hey, Brian.
Mark, and I can't pronounce your name, but it's you.
Theopanitis.
Just like it's written.
Yes.
All right, and Nick, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Hi, Nick. Glad you could make it.
I was all like cleaning up to do a Zoom meeting, and then I thought, oh, I can just wear my underwear.
Exactly. Okay.
You mentioned doing
everybody.
A Zoom meeting. Yes. Oh, go
Seth,
ahead.
I got to get the name. Okay, 323 area code.
Ken Cordray from Point Magoo.
Ken Cordray. Thanks, Ken. And Ed Stovin. For people who haven't seen the web manager, it shows me everybody's phone number who's on here. Another 209 number.
Yes.
Who is that, Ken? No.
Hi, Amy.
No, this is Dan.
Okay, the 209-338 number.
Anyone hear me?
Yes.
And what was your? Oh, is that Dan Peterson? Oh, okay. Thank
yes.
you. Nice
Dan,
to have you on. Yes, Ed, we can hear.
Howdy, howdy.
Oh, now. My phone's been acting funny. Sometimes I can't hear.
Oh, it's okay. All right.
You know how Ken got that that hack? They're trying to get me to buy gift cards for him.
Hey, Lance.
Yeah, know about that.
Hey, guys.
And Jared and John, see you guys. And
no,
Mike,
eight.
Great. Okay, I have someone with a 310 area code.
Oh, that's Sarah. Hi, Sarah Megan.
Oh, hey, Sarah, thanks. You're not in this
Hi.
Database yet.
Okay, cool.
Got you in there.
Okay.
I wanted to call in.
Hey guys, Mike McGarity on the line.
Hi, Mike.
What's
Hello
up,
everyone.
Mike?
Good. How are you?
Wonderful.
Hey, Mike. I've got someone with a 510 area code. Someone 510 area code just joined.
Yes, that's me.
209.
Who was that? Person with the 510 area code? Just say your name.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Hello, this is Paul. I have a 510 area code.
Oh, okay. Is this Paul Enstrom?
Yes, Paul Enstrom, yes.
Hi, Paul.
Amy, good to hear you.
Good to hear you, too.
Was there somebody in the background there with a 209 number?
I know you.
Yeah, that was Ken Oyer just joined too, and Terry. And
okay.
I've got.
I'm just about to get back.
Jim Woods just joined.
Evening, Jim. I hope Roberta's there.
Oh, she is. She'll be joining us. Welcome, everybody.
Hi, Jim.
And Bruce just joined, so we have 10 board members on, so we do have a quorum.
Fantastic. Hi, Bruce. I have 703. Do we want to wait just a couple more minutes to see if anybody else joins?
I've got 703, too, on my computer. We'll just one more minute because
okay.
We have a tight schedule. Okay. 909 area code.
Hi, that should be Jorge, the owner of Enjoy the Mountain, who is a Corba business partner.
Oh.
Hey,
Jorge.
Jorge.
What's your last name?
Herranz. H-E-R-R-A-N-Z.
A-N-Z. Okay.
Yep.
Z. Oh, and Joe Sam joined from the other room.
Hi, Joe.
Yes, I did. And I'm going to have to close the door between the rooms because I hear her voice before I hear it on the phone. There's a delay.
All right. And Wayne and Butch and Charlie, great to have you on.
Hello.
And Scooter, it wouldn't be a call without you.
Yeah, I'm going to mute. Thanks.
All right.
Butch.
Actually, I can mute everybody, but I'm going to ask everyone to sort of mute themselves. The way to ask a question is to press 5-star on your phone, 5-star, and a little hand will pop up. So we can, and we'll call on you, but it would be nice not to have the background noise. Okay, so Ken, I think we're ready to call the meeting to order. It's 7:05.
All right, it's 7:05 on April 27th of 2020, and I'd like to call to order the first half of our CORVA annual meeting. Glad everybody could make it. I hope everybody is well, and we're all being responsible and taking care of ourselves. This is going to be a very busy meeting. We're going to let members speak and ask questions, but we're going to keep it very short. We have some very special guests tonight. Sharon Miggins, the chair of the Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Program's on, and I think Brian will be on from there, too.
Yep, Brian's on. Just one
question.
Oh,
Brian, you're already on.
Yep.
Yes.
559 area code. What's your name, please? Person with the 559 area code that just joined. Person left. All right.
Nope. We do.
So, just so everyone understands.
Go ahead, Amy.
This system allows us to see everybody's number, who's on the call, and people other than special guests who haven't been invited. Everyone who's a CORVA member is invited on the call, but those who aren't, we encourage them to become members and come on the call. So, all right.
Okay, where was I? Oh, busy meeting tonight. We have lots of information for you. There's a lot of stuff going on, and it's amazing how fast things change. I just got an email that the trails and dirt roads in El Dorado National Forest will be opening up on May 1st. And that's how fast things change. We've had a great year here at CORVA. Somebody's got something wiggling around. We've been growing. Our membership's growing. Our recognition has been growing. We're working with other organizations to make sure that we support motorized recreation here in California. We're working with all of the government agencies. We're gaining a lot of respect with high-level management in the government. So we're doing a great job. I'm very proud of the entire board and all our volunteers. It amazes me how much work and how brilliant all of you are. And I'm proud. I'm just humbled by being surrounded by all of you, everybody on this board, and our members are fantastic. I'm just going to kind of skip real quick here because we have a couple things we have to do in CORVA this year. One of them is moving forward. We got to keep working on getting more volunteers to help out with administration type of stuff of running day-to-day operations of CORVA, or we'll have to maybe farm out some of those. those tasks. Something we need to continue to work on. That's the main thing I have for this year, besides all getting the trails open and getting life back to as normal as we can. I'm really disappointed that we were not able to celebrate the life and times of Ed Waldheim. Really missed the guy, and I'm sure we'll be celebrating him as soon as that's possible. And as far as things change so fast, now we're talking about e-bikes, and if we should be supporting them. So anyway, let's get moving and get to some important people rather than myself. Let's introduce the board members that are on the call.
Okay, I'm going to just introduce everybody by name. Ken, you and I are unmuted at the moment. Everyone else is muted, so we ensure a clear call.
And
we'll unmute people as needed.
We'll just take the roll call off of that.
Okay. So board members here, myself, Amy Granite, Ken Clark, Lori Lewis, Vinny Barbarino, Ed Stoven, Bruce Brazil, Diana Mead, Mike Moore, Bruce Switcher, and Charlie Lowe. And Wayne, I'm really pleased that you're on. But Wayne Ford did submit a letter of resignation right before the meeting, but he's still an honorary board member, I guess, and Bruce Brazil. I think I got Charlie in there. And our guests, we're very glad that you're here. Everyone's membership, unless you're a special guest, have been checked. Jared Dyke, Robin Reed, Ruben Clark, Brian Robertson, Debbie Campbell, Spencer Norton, Mark Ciofanidis, Nick Harris, Ken Cordray, Dan Peterson, John Kinley, Jared McLeod, Lance, Mike McGarity, Sarah Miggins, Terry Work, Dan Brown, Paul Enstrom, Dave Cundy, Ken Oyer, Jorge Herund, Joe Sand, Butch Miner, Stephen Howard, otherwise known as Scooter, and we have a new person who just joined from an 805 area code.
Yes, Eric Sidbeck, Clint McGoo.
What was your name? Sorry.
Eric Sidbeck.
Okay. Jared, text me because I can't hear the name, but I know it's a Point Magoo person, so we're good. So now we have a complete accounting of everyone who's on the call, along with Jim Sudi just joined us. Thank you, Jim. Just read the names of all the guests and the board members. Just to let you new people know, everyone is on mute. If you have a question, press 5-star on your phone. It will put up a hand, and I will be able to see that you have a question and be able to unmute you. Otherwise, it really helps with the background noises. And the other person was Eric Sidbeck from Point Magoo. So thank you, Eric, and thank you, Jared. Okay, Ken.
And thank you. Thank you, Amy, and thank you, everybody, for joining. All of you make, you know, Corva possible, and you're all doing such a fantastic job of supporting us. So the next item on our agenda would be review and revise the agenda. Does anybody have anything to add to that? With that being heard, nobody's bringing up any questions. So I will move on to, we need to approve the minutes from the 2019 annual meeting.
Wait. Brazil has a question. Bruce, go ahead. Had a question? Bruce, did you have a question about the agenda? Okay.
Are you muted,
Jared,
too, Bruce?
No, Bruce is unmuted. Jared, did you have a question?
Yeah, do you have Kevin Herring from Trail Therapy Off-Road on here?
No, I don't.
He just texted me. He said he's stuck and it's still playing music. Okay, I'll figure it out with him. Thanks.
Yeah, just tell him to get off. And everybody, if you have a question, Roberta just texted me and said, are we all on mute? Are we even necessary to be here? I think it's a really good idea for everyone to be here and hear what our guests have to say and talk about the issues that are approaching California. Diana, did you have a question? Diana? Unmute yourself.
Okay, I unmuted. So I was double muted. And shouldn't that mean unmuted? Never mind. The date on our agenda, part one, April 27th, 2019. A change to that, please.
Okay, sure. Sorry about
that,
guys.
Yes, I just noticed that.
Not a problem. Thank you. We do need to, that is changed to move on. I am unmuting people as we go along, so we can only mute the people necessary to make sure that the call is clear. But we didn't sound like we needed to revise the agenda, so let's go ahead. Just quickly, and people, board members can do this by pressing 5-star to approve the meetings from the 2019 annual meeting, and we can get that out of the way and get on with the rest of the agenda. Ken, would you call for that vote?
May I have a motion to approve the minutes from the 2019 annual meeting?
Someone press 5-star and you will be unmuted. Okay, Mike Moore. Wayne, did you have a question?
No, I'm sorry. I thought you said 5-star for approval.
No, yeah.
We got
okay,
to call
so,
for the vote first.
So Mike has submitted a motion. Wayne, do you want to second that motion?
I'll second that motion, sir.
Okay, that would be great. And now there's a...
Is there any discussion? No?
Well, it would be hard to hear. Everybody has to, one by one, just to make sure no one has noise. I'm unmuting people. Make sure they don't have any noise behind them adding to the call. So, board members, will you please hit 5-star? To indicate your approval for the motion to approve the 2019 minutes. All right. Looks like we have approval from everybody.
All righty. Got that out of the way. And we're only 2 minutes behind. I guess we'll move. Bob Hamm, did you have anything you wanted to add real quick?
I don't have Bob Hamm on unless he came later. I do have a new person from 619 area code.
Yes, ma'am, that's me, Kevin Herring, with Trail Therapy Off-Road.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Right,
thanks,
thank
Kevin.
You.
I'm glad you got on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right.
Well, I guess
now, little
we'll
by little,
move on
there's
for...
one question. Mark Theofanides, you're unmuted. Did you have a question?
No, I don't.
Okay.
All right. So I guess this will be the hot topic time, the COVID-19 update. Our board member, Bruce Whitaker, has been working on this. Bruce, do you have any news for us? Words of wisdom. I know here in the Bay Area, the six counties have
agreed to extend our stay-at-home order until the end of May. They haven't written the order yet. It'll be out by May 3rd when the last order expires. We have to remember that all these orders are being made by the county health officer. They are the ones that make the final decision on this. It's not the governor, not the president, not your senators, and not your assemblymen. Okay, Bruce, did I say anything wrong in that?
No, that's basically the way it works. The
okay.
issue is that California is way behind on testing and case track. And so everybody's worried if we relax things too soon that we'll get a wave of cases coming that'll cause another shutdown. And we'll kind of be starting all over again. So people are being really cautious through around the nation as well as California. So it's actually a big issue. I know a few of the counties were working on relaxing things, like San Luis Obispo County, where I live. We haven't really had a lot of new cases, but everybody still wants to go slow. I think it's mostly because the public wants to go slow. They don't want things to get any worse. They don't want to have to go through this again. So it's a huge issue. I don't know if anybody has any specific questions, but you're absolutely right. It is the county health department and the county health officers that are making these decisions.
Yes, I know that the six Bay Area counties are going to do some type of loosening of the SIP, but they're not saying yet. They haven't written. They let everybody know it's coming, but they aren't telling everybody yet.
Yeah, they have allowed some elective surgeries to resume. They have Ventura County and L.A. County are looking at open beaches and parks. But it's very limited. They're just really backpedaling on this rather than opening
up.
It's going to take a while to get everything opened up again.
All righty. Does anybody have any questions about what's going on with this as it pertains to OHV? If you do, hit 5-star and we'll unmute you.
Most of the people are unmuted at this point. Almost everyone is. I'm just going through
okay.
and finding those with background noises. But it's always a good idea to hit 5-star anyway. It keeps the call orderly. So I don't see any hands. Oh, Debbie has a question. Debbie?
Thank you. I didn't know. Am I muted?
Nope. Go ahead.
Okay. I hit star 5, then 5-star, so I wasn't sure which one it was. I do have a question on the COVID-19. We have our big run, the Modesto Ridge Runners, the second weekend in August, and that is in Nevada. So we are sending out the applications. But we also know we might be having to also send back everybody's checks. And we were just – that. I think that's one of our big questions is we had a board meeting and, we kind of thought, well, maybe we need some guidance a little bit on the thought of a run in August.
I think all indications are you're probably going to be okay by August.
Okay.
That's pretty
late. That's what we were thinking.
An awful lot of things have been pushed off until then. I know most of us, our calendars have been absolutely decimated by this whole thing. I mean, I had a year's worth of events that I had to cancel as a result of this. Everybody's booked again for August. I mean, I've got engagements lined up for then, so I'm hoping that... that things will get opened up by then. But, if we got a big surge of cases, all bets would be off. I kind of don't think that's going to happen. The indications are that we're past the peak, but nobody really knows and nobody wants to be wrong and make an incorrect projection. So if it was me, I would say cover your bets, tell people maybe you'll get your money back, but we're going to try to do this. Sounds like we've got a
extravagant.
You're definitely doing that. Well, we got a little nervous this last few days because our Stanislaus County Fair is not having their fair, and that's usually in mid-July. So we were thinking, oh, my gosh, you know. So, but anyway, we were kind of thinking August would be okay, but we also have putting in the notice and in the email saying if it's not and if we have to close it, we will send full reimbursement.
Yeah, the Paso Robles County Fair is also canceled, which is a huge economic hit to that area. I mean, it's the biggest thing that ever happened around here. So to have that put off is almost unbelievable. I think they are going to still allow all the FSA and 4-H animal type things to happen, but all the big music events that bring in the money are not going to happen. So it's a big hit.
Well, that was a good question, Debbie. Thanks very much. And I know there's a number of people on this call hoping to have an event in August, so let's see what happens. Moving on, we were hoping Bob Hamm would be on the call, and he's not on the call. So I will go ahead and with Ed Stoven putting you on the spot a little bit, we'll just give a legislative update, and anyone else who has any information can give. But basically, the legislature is coming back on May 4th, and there's no indication that they're not going to come back on May 4th as scheduled. And any bill that is not directly related to COVID-19 or has any cost to the state is being asked by the leadership in the Senate and the Assembly to be taken off the calendar for this year. So, for example, CORVA had a bill we were introducing called our reciprocity bill, which we wanted to charge individuals from states that charge our recreationists fees to go in there with, and because they have to permit, they have to submit new purchase, new off-road licenses when they go into their states. We wanted to submit a bill that anybody who's washing dishes, thanks for stopping, but we wanted to introduce a bill so it would be fair. So if you go to Arizona or Utah, for example, that anyone from California now has to buy a permit, an off-road permit. So we want to introduce a bill that those people then have to buy an out-of-state permit when they come here to recreate, and we're not able to introduce that bill this year. The one question that we don't know yet and haven't heard yet is about any of the Carnegie bills, and this is actually what we're most concerned with. So the other bill that's not going to be heard this year is the bill to extend the OHMBR commission, and that was also something very important to our community. And that bill won't be heard. By rights, the Carnegie bill shouldn't be heard either, but we have not had confirmation of that, so we're still on alert for those. There are three bills that threaten Carnegie at the moment. We're waiting to hear from our lobbyist if those will go through be allowed to be heard. It's a shortened session, so they don't have the luxury of hearing anything, and of course anything that's going to cost the state money will not be heard. Most people are unmuted. Does anyone have a question about the legislation? Ed Stoven, do you have anything to add?
Oh, thanks. I think you covered it. You're not going to hear any bills of any anything that interests us this year.
Well, Carnegie is still always out there. It's our personal nightmare.
I mean, they could sneak that by, but it doesn't fit the criteria they've announced.
No, it doesn't fit the criteria that were announced. Bruce Brazil, I believe you're unmuted. Let me double check. Do you have any update about the Carnegie lawsuits? that you could share?
yes and no. Being that we've got a lot of new guests on tonight, I can kind of try to bring them up to date a little bit. The one part that I've been following is the access easement lawsuit from the Connolly Ranch versus State Parks. And the actual trial part, you know, the jury trial part of that finished up, I think it was last December. The judge gave some preliminary judgments, but has not given the final judgment. And let's see, on June 9th of this year is the next court date where the Connolly Ranch had requested a motion for a new trial. They asked for a motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict. In other words, they wanted the judge to override the jury. And I don't think the judge is going to do that. She's been very good along that. And then the defendant's motion for reasonable expenses incurred will be heard at that time also. So not a whole lot to say other than the area that we could not access before is open and accessible. It looks like Connolly Ranch is not going to get much of what they were hoping for out of this. In fact, they may end up having to pay out of their pockets a fair amount for expenses. The other lawsuits, which is for the expansion area of Carnegie, I have not had any access to the court documents for that. Unfortunately, that's in a state court, and Sacramento couple years back says, well, if you want information, you're going to have to pay by the page. And that could be very, very costly. So I have not followed that. And I don't know if, Diana, do you have any background or anything that you might want to throw in there for folks that have not been following the lawsuits?
Am I unmuted?
Yes. Almost everybody is now.
Okay, good. One thing I did want to add from last Sunday's paper, not yesterday, but the week before, Save Mount Diablo, which is a foundation obviously related to Diablo, the actual mountain and the state park that is involved there, has extended its reach and its mandate. And they are going to seek to purchase and secure properties in every part of the Diablo range. Nothing was said about our expansion area, but that is.
What? Diana, did you drop off?
Anyone hear me?
Now I can hear you.
Now we do.
Okay. I don't know what happened. I moved my left elbow. I'll try not to do that again.
So do you believe that Carnegie is going to be at risk from this group trying to expand their range or their sphere of influence to include Carnegie?
I believe that they will become the entity, the nonprofit that Glazier's bill would look to, or excuse me, Bauer Kagan's bill would look to cede the property to. And they, you know, this wouldn't be just a blind nonprofit, whatever. This is a sanctioned body with a lot of credibility, and this would not be good, I don't think. But it's just something else to watch. And just stuff in the paper. Nobody called us or anything like that, just reading the paper. But other than that, Bruce and I tried to collaborate a little bit earlier today, and Clint out at Carnegie did say, too, that things are pretty much stagnant, COVID stagnant. We are trying to push to get more things handled out at Carnegie during this downtime. and we'll continue to do that. That's it.
Okay, sounds great.
Hey, can I jump back in here for a moment?
Yep.
Okay, this is Bruce again. Seeing how we've got Sarah Miggins on the call here, I know that she's not supposed to mention anything about active litigation, but I'm wondering if she could give us something general, like are we anywhere near the end of the lawsuits on the expansion area, or is it still just ongoing or something like that? Sarah, please.
I think you should ask Brian that. I have no idea, honestly. Sorry about that.
I'm just going to ask as a new person who joined with a 559 area code.
Yeah.
Who's this?
My name is Anthony Andrews.
Okay. There's a little bit of a mute, so if you could say it slowly and clearly, that would really help. What's your name? Lo, what's your name with the 559 area code? Okay. That's why we asked the question. That person just left. All right, sorry. It's our security. Bruce, I've lowered your hand. I know Sarah's going to get a report in just a little bit, and she may not be able to answer specifics, but she can give us direction. Okay. 209 area code. Hello?
Hello, Doug. How's it? Yeah.
Oh, hey, Doug. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
All
right.
Good.
Okay, 805 area code.
Yeah, Pismo Beach.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Zach from Sunbuggy.
Oh, hey, Zach. All right. Okay, so if, Ken, are we done with the lobbyist review? Does anyone have any questions? Yeah. All but four people are unmuted. I've been going through and trying to figure out where the background noise is coming from. So anybody has a question, it still does help if you press 5-star. But it looks like, Ken, we can go on. We'd be early. Ken Clark?
I was muted. Okay, I'm sorry. Moving on to Oceana Dunes. The one thing I know is...
Now it's a OHMVR commission.
Hey. Hey there.
Okay.
Hi, Ken.
Okay.
That's okay.
Hi, Sarah. I have 7:45. You're not on until 8 o'clock, according to my agenda.
No problem. So I know you got Bloody Mary mix. I saw your face. We know you're a little off. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
There's my Irish humor coming out, Amy.
I do have one of our members, Zach, and he sent me an email, and I'm going to read it. And he's got his hand up too.
I raised my hand by accident.
Oh, that's okay, okay. Zach. I'm going to read what you wrote, and I said we were talking. What we're doing is taking down any questions that we don't have time to answer during the call, but and we would answer them afterwards. And Zach has great concern about the CPUC and the coordination or the highway status of Oceana Dunes, SVRA, and Pismo State Beach, as it pertains to CPUC and their authority over that road. He has sent letters, which I've read, to the OHMVR Commission, and he's very concerned that the community isn't aware that CPUC has asserted authority over that road. So we're going to follow up on that question and have it as a talking point afterwards on our action log to determine. So I just wanted to put that out there. Sarah, you might have received a letter. You don't have to address it now, so you can just go ahead.
Okay, great. Can you hear me okay?
Perfect.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you for the opportunity, humbled by being called a special guest, and I'm going to really rely upon my colleague, Brian Robertson, to answer some of those more difficult questions, but I appreciate the invitation, and I was wondering who would be showing up, and I'm just so impressed, and I recognize many of your names, and I apologize if I didn't pronounce them right on those green and blue cards in the past, but it's great to be with all of you, and thank you. It's been too long. You know, Amy, we talked a week or so ago. I appreciated her reaching out, and she then followed up with this invitation, and I don't know if it's unusual to have a commission member, as I'm new, to be on this call, but I wanted you all to know, well, first of all, go ahead. Sorry, was somebody making a comment?
No, just reminding people about the background noise.
Oh.
There we go.
We good. Okay.
Yep.
So I assumed this was a Zoom call because I think all of us, some of us have become quite accustomed to the Zoom calls lately. Anyway, I did get dressed in a bright orange shirt in honor of Ed. So I just want you guys to envision this. And I think I've been pretty vocal since the Rubicon that changed my life. I did get a cool Jeep recently, and I'm wearing a ball cap that says Jeep Hair Don't Care. So wanted to set that visual up for all of you. But when Amy asked me to join last week, she asked, you know, what is the future role of the commission? And you know, I was a little bit breathless when I read it the other day, Amy, because as she knows, and some of you know, I run a national conservation course that provides youth and young adults the opportunity to maintain, repair the trails that you all ride upon. And anyway, like our trails, my operations came to a halt several weeks ago. So I'm trying to find such optimism as we all are right now. And I do see many silver linings day by day, but as somebody mentioned earlier, that everything keeps changing. So I just wanted to, again, express my thanks to all of you for showing up. I have a real appreciation for volunteer service. I've been managing public lands and volunteer service, not as a government employee per se, but as a nonprofit for years. And it's been a roller coaster for the past several weeks. And like maybe you, I'm waiting on a loan right now to get us through. But fortunately, the organization that I plug all the time, the American Conservation Experience, had to send home about 300 crew-based operations, but we still have a number of individual interns helping all of the public lands agencies that, you know, we all love as outdoor advocates and adventurists. But when I thought about the question, I reached out to my colleague, Brian. Brian Robertson's been keeping in touch with me weekly, you know, as we navigate through this, and I know he's on the agenda and we'll have
Sarah,
much to
Brian.
Relate.
Brian has his hand up, so I don't know if he wants to chime
dear.
In here.
Okay. Okay. What you got, Brian?
Brian, you are
gonna
muted.
He's going to cut me off.
No, not at all. No, I had raised my hand by hitting five star a while ago when Sarah pitched me the football to discuss Carnegie. And I was quickly going to say that I'm not able to comment on that. All lawsuits should be managed through Catherine Tobias. And then also Dan Canfield is kind of the lead, on those lawsuits. Calls like this, when we try to deliver information, can sometimes get us in trouble. We'd love to have a sidebar, ask specific information, but I think we're going to let Catherine and Dan Canfield kind of field those questions in the future on Carnegie, if you guys don't mind.
Understood.
Sarah, I'm going to ask you a question, which is sort of what we had talked about, and I had seen different chairs of the OHMVR Commission take different roles through the years, and I feel that your voice is unique. A little bit, you have experience in the OHV world. You also have experience in more of the environmental conservation side, and which could bring a lot of issues together. What do you see the role of the individual commissioners? How do you think you could best make a difference and help the OHV community?
I've thought about that, and you know what? Look, I think all of us, you know, can't over-communicate the value of recreation in the state of California, specifically the SDRAs and access to parks anytime. I know I'm hurting to get back to my favorite trails, and I think for me, one silver lining that I see during this time is that there's this reconnection happening to nature. I mean, like many of us from the old days, right? I keep thinking about how I'm seeing people pump up their bicycle tires. You know, they crowded those trails and beaches. They just did this weekend. I'm living in Los Angeles, and we're still restricted and behaving, but just south of here, we saw those images. And, you know, I think it's essential for us as a commission and a community to get back to our favorite trails and places, you know, being mindful, obviously, of safety. But I think the commission, the future of the commission is that we're accountable to you now. And when you asked me, you know, that question about the future, I could only ask, you know, I would want to leave this group with a similar question and bring it forward, hopefully to a rescheduled commission meeting in August, and share these questions. You know, how do you envision our future role, and how could we serve all of you better? I mean, who am I to speak of the commission's vision in the future alone? And I want to know if we are meeting your needs. So again, just keeping safety first, but reminding the community, you know, our electeds, our public lands managers, that our parks, our recreation, our access is essential to all of our health. And I think we need to pound on the doors and enlist their support right now to open up as soon and safely as possible. So I guess, you know, when I thought about your question, that what immediately came to mind, I wanted to ask back, you know, how does this group envision that, and how can I move that forward, you know, with the commission and all of your support?
Thanks.
Yeah.
Welcome to someone who just joined with a 661 area code. Hello. Hi there.
Hello,
new person. It's who?
Jeremy from Bakersfield.
Okay. Jeremy, what's your last name?
Rowell, R-O-W-E-L-L.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Does anyone have questions for Sarah about what they would like to see the role of the commission into the future, or just comments I mean, there's many of us that have a lot of years of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like I said, almost everyone is unmuted, so.
Okay, well, this is Ken again. I will say, Sarah, I'm really glad to have you on the commission. You're doing a fantastic job. And to our members, get to know your commissioners. They want to hear from you. I've met almost all the commissioners in the past 10 years. Well, actually, I have met all of them, and they're great people. Most of them are they're really fantastic people, and they enjoy the same things you do. So come on out to the commission meetings and the tours and meet your commissioners. The tours are really nice because you get a chance to meet the commissioners one-on-one and talk to them. It's always a good time. So if anybody has any questions for Sarah, bring them up now or we shall move on.
I'd like to say something.
Sure, who's this?
It's Brian Robertson again. I would just like to say that Sarah and her fellow commissioners have just done a phenomenal job. It's been really tough these last few commission meetings. We've had a lot of tough topics. We've had a lot of change. We've had some commissioners that are no longer on the commission, and I'm kind of scared to death to see Paul leave. I'm so used to having Paul always there. This last meeting we had in Sacramento, the things that Sarah did behind the scenes, her working with Ted, working with Tom, working with Lisa and Liz, it was just phenomenal. So, Sarah, my hat's off to you. You're doing a great job. I'm glad that you got reappointed. Keep doing what you're doing. Back to the commission, as we enter into our 50th anniversary year next year, I just can't stress the importance of the commission. There's really, I don't think, any other commission in the state of California that works with the community and works with the department kind of almost in a triangular kind of team approach. I've been asked before by other state park folks, you know, what's so important about this commission? I said, well, this commission is our partner. This commission partners with the community. They speak many languages that, you know, everybody gets to be heard. They're the eyes and ears. And so I, seeing the sunset on the commission in the future, it kind of scares the hell out of me. So, you know, put it on your calendar. We need to worry about it. You know, what if we have something that overshadows the legislation to get it done, and then we wake up one day and we don't have the commission? That'd be a terrible day. I think the commission has helped us get to 50 years. I think if we didn't have the commission, what we look like right now, even though we've gone through transformation, but I think, you know, the size of the grants program, education, safety, I really think that was, you know, the commissioners over the years coming up with these very, very important ideas and programs, and the division has said, hey, that's a great program, and together we've sold it to either the state parks or even the governor's office. So I can't say enough about the commission and how badly we need to have the commission in the future.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
I'm just going to ask a question. This is Amy. The last commission meeting, there were many of us who were on the call who actually attended the meeting, and we did have concerns. A lot of people in the community had concerns about how reorganization has affected our state parks, has affected our OHV trust fund. I know a number of us have been talking behind the scenes and wanting to make sure that the work to determine the appropriate expenditures coming out of the OHV Trust Fund remain to benefit the OHV community. In other words, the OHV Trust Fund money remains specifically with it. I know Brian's done a great job in protecting that money, but we just always have to make sure that it's a very tempting pot. Especially in these difficult economic times, what is going to be a very different budget for the state of California than the original budget in the May revised. So I know the commissioners are aware of that now. Sarah, can you speak to your concern or how you took the information that was presented at that meeting?
I just delivered those letters that were read at that meeting just last week. It took a little bit of time. If you recall, that was the day, I think, well, just a few days before all of this got really real. So I think priorities shifted a little bit, but I did work with Brian to finalize those requests, and they have been submitted as of last week to Lisa, Liz, and the attorneys. So I feel that, you know, it's in writing and in their hands, and it's still a little bit delayed, but I feel pretty confident that we represented, you know, all of you and all of the commission, and what you saw and heard is what we delivered.
That sounds really promising. Hey, we have 40 people on this call. Someone else has to have a question.
Wow.
Yes.
Come on,
and
speak up.
At the moment, all but four people are unmuted. The four, for some reason, as I went through, you just had a lot of background noise. And one of them is Joe, and he's in the other room, so that's why that was necessary.
This is
my husband.
Yes.
Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
So, Sarah, Brian, thanks for being on the call. So one of the questions I have is, in your new role, Sarah, what are we going to do to educate all these new users out there that have a credit card and go out and buy a side-by-side, and they need to be educated on the rules and you know, the etiquette of off-roading? Many of us grew up on the sport. Many of these new people are not getting it. On the various languages, so I'd like to know what the OHV Commission is going to do for that, reaching out and educating.
Well, for me personally, I can only speak to the volunteer program that we toured on the San Bernardino National Forest, and I think it's up to, you know, all of you individuals, clubs, us as commissioners, you know, as Californians, at the ground level to pass on that message. I think it's really threatening when it's pushed down from agencies and sometimes, sorry, Brian, from people with badges. But I do believe that, you know, that is all of our role through, you know, the education program and passing that message forward. And that's unfortunate to hear that you're learning of some hardships that might be happening on the landscape.
I apologize for interrupting. We just had someone else join the call from 213 area code. Can you please identify yourself?
Yes, my name is Chris Strong.
Chris.
I'm calling from Torrance, California.
Strong, is that the last name?
Strong, T-R-U-O-N-G.
T-R-U-O-N-G. Okay, thanks so much. Sorry, Sarah.
Yeah. No problem.
So this is Ken. To Jim's point, I have seen the same thing. You know, people just, if you got good credit, you can get a side-by-side, and they have no education on how to respect our natural resources. And yes, Sarah, it's up to the clubs and the volunteer organizations. On the Rubicon, we actually have a kiosk at the entry to the Rubicon Trail at Loon Lake, even though there's no fee, but there is always a volunteer there, and the county supplies maps, spill kits, and other things. And there's always, they staff it with the volunteers, and they talk to people as they come in. But also from the state and the division, we probably could use some educational material that we could give to different clubs and volunteer organizations. To hand out to people as we interact with them. Just a
sure.
thought.
Yeah, and Brian has his
purpose of a trust fund, I'm sure he's got his hand up. Go for it.
Hey, so it's Brian again. Jim, I just wanted to answer you directly. We are currently in negotiations working on our training contract. I've got Callum McLaughlin working on it, real sharp guy. I said, Callum, we need to expand who we're training. We need to go after the side-by-sides. We need to continue doing what we're doing with ATVs, and we need to continue doing what we're doing with motorcycles. And then with Jeeps and everything else and snowmobiles, we're not getting the best bang for the buck right now on our training. So he's completely redoing that training proposal. We're going to put it out to the public, we're hoping, soon. Try to pump more money into it, because we all know that outreach and training is probably the best way to save lives and to make it so people don't need tickets. Ongoing, we have Don Schmidt, who has taken over for Donna with our Interpretation Education Outreach Program. Last year, I think they had scheduled 42 visits to get out there and educate people, tell them what websites to go to get training. You know, I think we're really doing a lot of work, but I think that sport in that particular use is just growing so much that we're not keeping up. So another reason why I told Callan to really just dig into it and see if we can spend more money. Let's see here on my notes. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Hey, Vinny, did you have a comment, Vinny?
Yeah. We're talking about education. I mean, isn't that's one of Corvus? I mean, that's one of our missions, is to educate the public about OHV. So, you know, if we could find a way to when somebody buys an OHV or a motorcycle or something, you know, they could at least get introduced to Corva somehow. I mean, you know, that's something we could, you know, maybe work on at the dealerships, and either get them to, you know, give them a membership, or give them a complimentary membership or something when they first buy it or something like that. Just my thoughts.
Yeah, I think that model exists. That's something I work locally with the shop just at the base of the San Bernardinos, and we would distribute different renditions, of course, as maps. But that can take place right at the point of sale. Through the funding of the trust, we were able to work with the dealerships directly as, you know, frontline education.
Terry, work? Terry, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you for taking my question. My name is Terry Work. I'm a past board member and a past president of Point Magoo four-wheel drive. I'm looking at your the OHM, the ARC, basing your site on CA.gov, and it just strikes me, everyone's saying education. I'd like to see more interaction with the public out there. I see you do a tour of Java, great, that was a great tour, Cow Mountain, I like that. But one of the hot spots, as everyone knows, is Oceano Pismo. Are you planning a tour for that? And how can us, as members of the OHV organizations and club, assist you with that, and that tour and any other tours coming up? Because I'm not seeing much, say, on the page. I know it's a California page. They have interaction with you.
Yeah, that's been a real focus, thanks to Jim's duty motivation to get out there. And I believe we were there on tour, what was it, Brian, in November? I've been back there so many times.
I think about November. Was when we had a commission meeting and tour. And I think over the last few years, we've probably had three or four. I think there's always room for more information, more communication. I know that Don Schmidt, just on, you know, communication with Interpretation Outreach, he's worked with Kevin Pierce's team. I know during the PWP The education component outreach is going to be plugged in. Feel free to just send us an email and ask specific questions or areas you think that we're lacking. And as the team, whether it's interpretation education, or me, or if we ever get a deputy director, we can address it and work on those things. I know there's room for improvement. There always is.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Yeah, so this is Robin Reed with IE4W. And I was thinking, as I was listening to all of this, that we need to get some side-by-side groups that put on things like Forest Fest. So mm-hmm. I'm in IE4W. We put on Forest Fest up in Big Bear once a year. We had to cancel it this year. But, we take the people out in 4x4s and teach them to clean stuff up and have a little bit of respect for the trails. And I'm also, I've done for Jeep Jamboree. We do one of those in Big Bear each year. And if there was some way with the side-by-sides that some groups could put on some events for those people to go to that would allow them to see nature and to understand everything like we do with the Jeep or in the 4x4 groups. So it's just a thought, but I don't know how you would start something like that. Because we have several members that have side-by-sides, but they don't, they don't go on our regular runs. They do take them on other things. But there needs to be a group that brings these people in and shows them the right way. And I don't know if there's ways to put on events like that. It'd have to be somebody that's got a side-by-side so that just people with the side-by-sides would be able to be right there with them and understand. Anyway, that's just my two cents.
Okay, we're going to put that on our action log to continue the conversation because it's 8:05. We want to get back to our timetable. I just do have a question because someone just joined 559 area code, and it sounded like it was Mike. And Mike, what's your last name?
Stovall, Stovall.
Okay, F is in what?
S is in Sam, T is in Tom, O, V is in Victor, A-L-L.
Okay, I'm not showing you on our Corva membership. Are you member?
Not yet. I was invited by Mike McGarity. He just joined.
Oh, okay.
What's up, Mike?
He asked me to listen.
All right. Yes,
I'm
Mike did.
I'm not trying to promote myself, but Mike's helped me a lot.
We're very strict on, because we talk about issues that are specific to our community. We want to make sure everyone's on our call. Our Corva members are special invited guests, and you're a special invited guest from a Corva member, so that's perfectly okay. So thank you for bearing with me and understanding as we go through this. I'm just going to go through. It is 8:07, and we have Jim Studi coming up. I'm just going to go through and we have 42 callers. We have three people for some reason are causing feedback. One is Ruben Clark, one is Dan Patterson, and the other is Ken Oyer. I apologize to all you guys. As I was going through and unmuting, there was just feedback from your lines. But you can use 5-star if you ever want to say anything, but we've got a pretty clear line. So everyone who's on here besides me, those who don't know, this is Amy Granite. I'm the managing director of Corva. Jared Dyke, Ken Clark, the president of Corva, Lori Lewis, board member of Corva, Robin Reed, Ruben Clark, Brian Robertson, our special guest, Debbie Campbell, Spencer Norton, Vinnie Barbarino, Southern Director of Corva, Mike Theofanidis, Nick Harris, a special guest from AMA National, Ken Cordray, Ed Stoven, board member, also president of SDORC, San Diego Fraud Coalition, Dan Peterson, Bruce Brazil, board member, Diana Mead, past president and board member, John Kinley, Jared McLeod, Lance, Mike McGarity, Sarah Miggins, chair of the OHMBR commission, Terry Work, Paul Enstrom, who I haven't seen for a while, Dave Cundy, Mike Moore, treasurer, Ken Oyer, amazing volunteer, Bruce Witcher, our VP of Land Use and Public Policy, Jorge Heron, Wayne Ford, board member many times, Joe Sand, Charlie Lowe, our board member, VP, Butch Miner, Stephen Howard, Jim Woods, past president of CORVA and current board member, Eric Sidbeck, Jim Sudi, our special guest, president of Friends of Oceano Dunes, Kevin Herring from Trails Unlimited, Zach from Sunbuggies, CORVA supporters, business sponsors, Jeremy Rowell, Chris Truong, and Mike Stovall from Clausen Motorsports. And I think I spoke to Mike once, and so that's why your name was familiar. I apologize for not recognizing it early on.
That's okay. I have met you before. I remember your voice.
Ken, if it's okay, do you want to introduce Jim Sudi?
Yes, I'd like to introduce Jim Sudi, president of Friends of Oceana Dunes. We've invited him to give us a little bit of update. I know one thing, every afternoon, well, it's about 3 days a week in the afternoon while I'm trying to take a nap, I get woken up by a text alert that there's dust on the beach. But anyway, Jim, could you give us an update?
Sure, be happy to. Hope you guys can hear me okay. For those who don't know, I am a life member of CORVA. We started Friends of Oceana Dunes, Ed Waldheim and I, 15 years ago this year. So miss Ed dearly. So Friends of Oceana Dunes, we are a nonprofit volunteer organization, 501c3. Sole purpose is to protect what we have and get what we've lost back. And we spend a lot of time doing that. So over the last 19 years, we fought many a battle dealing with endangered species from snowy plover to tidewater goby and steelhead trout to youth endangerment issues from a rabid doctor in town to latest the dust issues going up on the Napoma Mesa. For the last decade, Friends of Oceana Dunes has raised and spent over $1 million, about $1.2 million on this fight. We've won a big victory, God, I don't say 8 years ago. We got $350,000 back, going by memory, in a lawsuit. We just won another lawsuit that we are going through final settlements, and we should get anywhere between $200,000 and $250,000. We're actively engaged in 5 other lawsuits and are actively looking at filing 2 other lawsuits dealing with this issue, as well as some endangered species issues around the Oceana Dunes. We've got a great lawyer, same lawyer we've used for the past 15 years. Oceana Dunes, unlike many of the SVRAs, has one unique aspect, and that is we've got to deal with the California Coastal Commission. As taxpayers, we should be extremely frustrated that we have dual agencies trying to manage a property, namely the Oceano Dunes. So we got Coastal Commission and state parks battling time and time again here on the Oceano Dunes. This dust issue has got the long legs going back over a decade. If you go back to some of the original meetings and videos and documentation, been extremely political for those who don't know all the players.
Jim, can I stop you just a second? We just had someone call and I want to check. It sounded like the first name was Jason. Jason, what's your last name?
Jason Skinner.
Okay. And thanks for doing that. We're just checking everybody for their membership at Corva. Appreciate you bearing with me.
Hey, Amy, this is Charlie. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, I just wanted to say that my fiance Heidi Ward is also on the call.
Okay,
she's a
great
member.
Thanks.
Okay.
Right. Thanks very much. We appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. Sorry, Jim. Just security.
Sure. The California Coast Commission does an annual permit review. They've done it numerous times over the years. Those in state parks, and when we formed in 2001, it was a Coast Commission hearing that was known as the Valentine's Day Massacre, where the Coast Commission actually took a vote to close the park, and that's what was the started Friends of Oceano Dunes. Many of them were involved in the Coast Commission hearing last year in San Luis Obispo, where the OHV community rallied, and it was greatly appreciated. And it's fabulous to see my estimate of, you know, roughly 1,500 people show up and show support. Oceano Dunes has special meaning, and it's a special place to a lot of us. My family's been doing it over 50 years, or going there and recreating. So we have seen the loss over the years personally, so we know the pain. That's why we're so invested to try to do what we can do. We are really limited based on resources, what we can do legally, what we can do politically. We've always gone through spurts with our support with state parks. It's been a roller coaster trip. We're either working hand in hand to protect the Oceano Dunes. When I say state parks, it's really the leadership. It's not Brian. It's not some of the other people who I continue to call my friends. But it's really up in the leadership aspect. And right now, I think we are at a great divide. The leadership in Sacramento does not seem to be fighting the way I think they should be fighting and doing what they should be doing to protect the Oceano Dunes. For those not aware, the superintendent of the Oceano Dunes, that spot has been vacant for going on 4 years, begging and pleading to get the superintendent in there to help manage that park and offload Kevin Pierce, who's just been doing an awesome job trying to fill the void. But, I mean, these neglects of this park is just causing a great deal of harm that we need to improve. So that's it, real high level, what we're doing. We're constantly working on legal and political moves. We do not broadcast what we do or are doing for strategic reasons, protection. We are currently involved with lawsuits with state parks, Coastal Commission, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and the Air Patrol District and local municipalities, and we'll continue to do so. So that's it, unless anybody has some specific questions.
This is Bruce Brazil. And I was wondering, are they currently collecting the dust specimens? And if so, do you have access to the readings or anything like that? So we might have some idea of what the dust pollution is like without the OHV activity? Thank you.
Sure. So the dust monitors are running 24/7. State Park operates several with their group of the scientific advisory group. They also have another group called the Scripps that's been collecting some samples inland and on the beach, looking at other PM contributions. Air Pollution Control District has numerous monitors. The state parks team, the scientific advisory group, and others have access to this data. I have talked with numerous people who are involved in reviewing that data. I won't give names or outcomes, but we have an understanding of what is going on now. We have an understanding with what we believe the 48-acre floor dune is contributing or preventing, and it is not doing what is advertised. And I don't know if Brian and or Sarah will have an opportunity to speak to that. It might be too premature for them to speak to it, but there's a lot going on. So the simple answer is yes, it's being tracked. Yes, it's being monitored.
Terry, work? Terry?
Yeah, Jim, this is Terry Work. Coming along the same lines that the question was asked and just answered, but I've also been noticing a lot of the news up there has been reporting the good days of the air quality up there, and which have been a lot since nobody's been on the beach, and they also report the bad days, of course. But are we, besides just tracking the write-ups, are we taking note or recording when they put it on a newscast so we can have that for future video presentations to some of these Coastal Commission meetings?
A lot of people post them not only on the forums, but there's a lot of historical information that's gathered with regards to that. For those who are opposed to our sport will spin the data any way they want. And one of the things they keep saying is the dust will continue to blow until the dunes heal. And air quotes around, because they won't define if it's a week, if it's a month, if it's a year. We've heard everything from it takes 6 months. I've heard people it's going to take 20 years for the dunes to heal. It's just, my word, it's a bunch of crap. And the way you can overcome that is with sound science and good people. The problem that we have, I have a technical background, but I'm just a dumb off-roader. You got to have those with a science pedigree that can put forth the arguments that will hold up and stand up.
Okay, and I also know, how do you feel about the sudden change for the horsemen that was posted up last week? Suddenly they're suddenly against us for all the work we've done for them.
So I am the horsemen actually got screwed many times over here. I've worked with some very vocal advocates in the equestrian community down there, and they have been very supportive of us. But one of the things that state parks really needs to do, and we need to do, is really relook at the equestrians getting a free ride. They park at the parking lot at Finn's. They don't pay a dime. They jump on their horse to go riding through our park, while you and I have to pay a fee to go out there and use it. They get to use it for free, and then they're going to stand back and say that they want it all. And we need to take a stronger stance. We need to balance. The beautiful thing about the Oceano Dunes or Pismo is it is a perfect picture of multi-use between the fishermen, the equestrians, the hikers, the swimmers, the air kites, and everything that goes on out there, as well as the endangered species programs. And so we just need to figure out how to better market that and present it. I go back to the model of Ducks Unlimited. And if I'm not a duck hunter. I don't belong to Ducks Unlimited. But they have a neat model where they are protecting the areas that they use. And we need to begin into a similar model that we are the advocates in protecting the spaces around us that allows our continued use and recreation. Unfortunately, I think we've been twisted a little bit. And we use our green sticker dollars to rehabitat or fix or just restore areas. And we need to change that mindset that we are in a collaborative effort to enhance this nature in order to allow us that area. And we've been pushing and promoting a no-net loss policy. And I really want to see the OHV Commission embrace as well as state parks. When you designate 1,500 acres, 10,000 acres, whatever it is, that is the park. And we always are going to have buffer areas around it. If you need to close an acre, restore an acre, or do anything else, you open up equal amount of land somewhere else. So, therefore, the total acreage is never lost. So I'll get off my soapbox.
Before we move on, I also want to recognize Karen's hard work, and her presentations at the OHMVR Commission have been really, really valuable and really great. So tell her that please convey that it's noted and it's appreciated, and I know it's hard going to all of those meetings.
Thank you, Amy. I appreciate that.
Well, you're speaking up for something that you feel passionate about, and I really think that makes a huge difference. The more people we have talking with passion about what they truly love, the better the meetings are. One thing I do want to note is that the APCD seems to be dealing, it's almost a frantic response to all of this, and the SAD science advisory group seems to be siding with them in a political way, and the letter that they gave out about the closure and distributed, I really thought it was bordering on a very nasty attempt to justify bad science. Just to close, Jim, is there anything that we have 43 people, 42 now on the call, is there anything that you want to specifically ask them to help with? Is it education, as you talked of earlier? What's the best way of people who love the dunes to help?
Get active. Write your letters. Send them easy. Get involved. And unfortunately, our community, in my mind, I'll say this, is that lazy. People aren't taking the time to read information and want to spread or, boiled down for them. We need to get more people to read and actually spend the time to get informed so they can get educated.
Okay, so it goes back to a different kind of education. Somebody who's moving some stuff behind them, please try to keep it quiet in the background. Someone's either on speaker and we can hear you moving. Otherwise, I'll have to mute people again. Thanks, guys. So, all right, we're going to move on with our schedule. I really want to thank Jim and Karen for all their hard work. I know no one who works harder, and I just want to say personally, it's amazing how many of us have been affected by Ed Waldheim. And I know Sarah and I were at one time comparing notes, and I started tearing up. So Ed left a legacy behind him, which is pretty amazing. Ken, do you want to introduce Brian?
Yes. Next up is Brian. What's your last name?
Robertson.
Robertson. That's right. I just lost it. And you are the acting deputy director?
No, I am the OHMVR division chief. And currently,
okay.
we don't have a deputy director or an acting deputy director.
Oh, okay. So you're it. So we
okay,
have you
well,
down here, Brian, on reopening the parks. How are we going to go about doing that? How can the community help you?
So if I can, I'd like to just check in with Jim. I've worked with Jim. Great guy, great group. Please keep up the fight. I'm not going to go into details, but I know we've had some coffee and we've had some good discussions. So keep it up, sir. Also, too, I've been invited to look at Oregon Sand Dunes. Jim invited me and George McDougal and my son to show a different sand dune recreation area. Things like that, just really help help folks like myself just keep on track and stay on the course. So thank you for that, Jim. I did want to go back to the commission. We talked about the commission a little bit. I was talking to Sarah She agrees it's so important that we have a commission meeting in August. Just to let you know, we're going to shoot for that, even if we have to have a Zoom call with Sarah was telling me you could have 2,000 people on a Zoom call. We'll get Amy to work the mute button for us when we do 2,000 people. So, again, please put that on your calendar. I don't have it in front of me. I think that's the 8th or 9th. We'll be probably doing the Fordyce Trail with Sierra Trek and up in Tahoe, so we can see that. We're not going to go out on the trail and totally wheel, but we're definitely going to look at all the concessions and vendors and that type of thing. So with that, I'll go back to the state parks and reopening. If I could go back in time, we set up the DOC, which is a Department Operations Center, excuse me, on March 17th. At that point, they pulled in all the division chiefs, managers of, budgets, administration, Northern Division Chief, Southern Division Chief, and we just started working through the issues. We started watching all the news, just like you. We were contacted by the governor's office. Lisa's been living at the SOC, which is the State Operations Center. Really a coordinated effort. All of our teams up and down the state, our employees, have just been working their butts off, taking chances, I think, with their own health, but so many people are dedicated. So currently doing the DOC, that's still ongoing. I'm still working at the DOC. I'd like to say that sometimes things that used to take us 2 weeks or 2 months to get done, sometimes we're getting done in 2 hours or in two phone calls. It's amazing when people are motivated and everybody's like, hey, we're going to let our differences put them to the side and let's just try to save lives and save our parks. So that's been going well. Over that time, we were in a lot of discussions on hard closures, soft closures. I'll just briefly go into that. I'm not sure if people understand. A hard closure is when everything is completely closed down, no restrooms, no nothing, and you're not supposed to walk off the sidewalk into the park. A soft closure is where the parking lot is closed, and maybe you'll have like 6 restrooms. You only have one open. We want the local folks to walk in, get that outdoor experience, that healthy experience. It's not for destination type of visitation. That's a soft closure. So with those soft closures, we've been trying to work with the counties. Earlier you talked about the counties having having the authority to really call what's going on in their county. So we've been working with them. The city, sometimes you'll have a rogue city, and they'll say, well, we're not going to do what the county's doing. And right there in the middle of all of that is state park units, whether it's Folsom Lake or Huntington Beach or Hollister or OW. We just seem to always be right there where it's, something's always going on. During those closures, we were able to keep the SVRAs off the closure list until the third round of closures. I think Sonoma Mendocino was one of the first, a couple San Diego parks. Having me at the DOC has been helpful. Mark Haida has been subbing me out on my days off. We've really just, always reminding them, SVRAs, SVRAs. Currently, we're partnering with, and also our federal partners, we're partnering with BLM down at Onyx and Jawbone, trying to find that balance. There is talk currently of starting to take hard closure parks to maybe a soft closure, take soft closure parks to a limited access. That might be like limited hours, limited parking. There's a lot of logistics that we're trying to figure out. But I think what's been the toughest thing for us to kind of manage is if you kind of look at a starfish, and I know it's kind of interesting, but each one of those arms, you can put the federal input, you can put the county input, state parks, the governor's office, the secretary's office, cities, special interest. So we're trying to please usually 7 or 8 different groups in the process of trying to say, can we open or can we go to a soft closure, that type of thing. So it's been tough, but I think we're close. I keep reminding the Kathy Amons, the Liz McGurks. I haven't seen Lisa, but if I saw her, I'd remind her that the OHV community is one of the most flexible, understanding, partnering communities around, but don't take them for granted. If State Parks is going to open a beach park, well, why aren't we opening an SVRA? So that's been my message. I think that SVRAs is probably one of the easiest locations that we can do social distancing. We just will tell people, hey, when you back your truck or your toy haul or whatever you come there in, make sure you got 6 to 10 feet between each other, hey, and enjoy your day and ride like, you know, all day long. I think it's the easiest way. If you get a chance to talk to your local elected officials, please, you know, promote that. I think we could manage that very easily to let people get back out there and enjoy their OHV. And, you know, again, if you have a trailer, you got a family of, you know, 4 or 6, as long as they're your group, you stay away from other folks, I think we should do it. Now, here's where the question's been coming up is, well, is it right that these folks go out and recreate and might have an accident and then they're going to be taken to a hospital? And then they're going to draw resources away from, you know, the COVID patients. I think what we're seeing is the numbers. We have COVID. We have folks that, unfortunately, are passing, and it's terrible. We have folks that are sick. But the numbers are nothing like what we're seeing, like, in New York or something like that. Doesn't mean they can't still happen. But I think we could probably manage, because our sport, if you look at the numbers and the millions of people that are visiting, like, you know, Oceana Dunes, OW, Hollister, Prairie City, you know, per riders, our accident rate is very, very low. So I'd like to take a chance and open those parks up and say we're not going to impact our medical facilities that much. And you know what? If we do, then let's just pull it back. Or let's say COVID starts up again, let's pull it back. Let's see what else here on my list. You know what? Before I get into budgets and a couple other things, I'll take a pause so people can ask questions.
Okay, I'm looking for hands. I don't see any hands on my board.
This is Ken. I'd just like to say thank you, Brian. I know you've always worked very hard for us. And, yeah, getting the SVRAs open would be very important. I'm seeing a lot of posts about, especially younger people that aren't quite as educated, looking for places to ride, and most of it is all illegal. If we don't get the SVRAs, we're going to have a lot of resource damage going on. It's an unfortunate situation. But I appreciate everything you're doing for us.
Okay.
Well, you know, Kenny, go ahead.
Terry has a question. Terry Work.
Yes, hey, Terry. Sir. Thanks for taking my question. This is Terry Work. My question is along the lines of opening the SVRA, couldn't you enlist the help of throughout California? We have various clubs and organizations. Couldn't you enlist them to also help with the opening of the parks, do make sure that the place isn't getting trashed or people just going so nuts, you know, they've been with their cabin fever and like that, to help you guys out? Because I know there's just not enough rangers in California. And I know all of us in OHV would be willing to help so that we do have a safe and sane opening of all of the SVRAs. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a fantastic idea. I think, wherever you're located in the state or where you like to go, OHV recreate, contact that local SVRA. Contact that local BLM or U.S. Forest Service office and offer your services. Tell them, hey, I come with many. Give us a task and we'll work on that. I know that we've been working with the U.S. Forest Service, like up in the Mendocino. You know, they're trying to, you know, educate and try to, you know, keep people from, you know, doing resource damage. We're going to have some groups that just, we're going to miss them on the first round of education. I think the OHV group is probably the best group out there that if you explain to them what they're doing wrong and where they can go and how to do it better, they go, hey, thanks for that. So we're working with our federal partners, with our county partners. We're not just stuck with the SVRAs. since we're doing $36 million a year in grants, there's a lot of OHV going on out there. But back to your original question, just pass the word on. Contact, you know, at Hollister Hills, it would be Bill Larkin. You know, at Prairie City, it would be Peter Jones. I mean, just call them up and go, hey, what can I do to help you out? And trust me, they'll give you a list.
Okay, thank you. I've worked with Peter many times in the past, so thank you very much.
Hey, Amy, I've got a question. This is John.
Hey, John.
Brian, any idea, it's a very, very small, it's not an SVRA, it's just an OHV area called Wildomar down in Orange County, Temecula area. Does anybody know anything about the closure there? We had a fire there a couple of years back and a lot of big rain and whatnot. There's been some damage and whatnot. Does anybody have any information on that location?
You know, I apologize. I don't have any information on that. And really, I'm closing my eyes thinking of times I've been down at Lake Paris and other areas. I don't have a visual on it, but you can shoot me an email and I will get you information on it. And usually when we're dealing with areas that are kind of like the smaller areas, more satellite type, they're probably receiving a grant. We can get Sixto or Martha to help on that information. I do have to admit sometimes some managers, you know, they'll close a unit or a location that has opportunities, you know, based on restoration or something. And sometimes it's just kind of tough to get them to reopen it after 2 or 3 years because, you know, I don't know. That's too political there. But just give me an email and we'll see what we can do for you.
Okay. John, we'll put it on our action log. Butch?
Hey, it's Butch with the Bay Area Writers Forum. And I guess I just have a comment that we need to police ourselves and mentor our community, and I don't know how better to do that. Social media sort of. I guess that's all.
You know, you were kind of garbled, but I heard education and probably reaching out. I think the best thing is just the new social media is amazing. And if you call the division or let's say you call one of the local SVRAs that are nearby, they'd love to go and do interpretation outside the park. Almost all of them have like an interpretive trailer that has the outreach, that has the maps, you know, that, you know, has the tread lightly. You know, just you call and we'll haul our trailer out there and we'll engage.
Thank you.
Just a question, Brian, when we start back up, do you think some of the junior ranger programs are going to be to start back up or that's going to be afterwards, you know, getting the kids involved, getting those programs back?
You know, I think we're all kind of expecting that we're going to have, well, let me back up a little bit. You know, camping is going to be on the back burner for quite some time. It's not a big revenue issue for the SVRAs. I know it is in some of the other state parks. You might see their camping come online a little sooner. I think what we're trying to do is pace ourselves because we feel that across state parks and OHV parks, once we open the gates, we're going to have this mad rush because everyone's going to be like, you know, freedom, and they're going to come out and kind of ride quite a bit. I mean, it's going to be very busy. And I think as those weeks tick along, I think we'll start those programs back up. You know, and we'll probably have to retool a lot of those programs because things just aren't going to be the same. So kind of the best answer is we just want to get the parks open safely. And after the big tsunami of visitation, then we'll start, you know, reinitiating those programs.
How about if we start on social media kind of distributing and saying, asking clubs to get involved? You know, Point Magoo is very involved with Hungry Valley, for example, and Friends of Ocotillo Wells, you know, with Ed Stoven on the call is very involved, obviously, with Ocotillo Wells, just to reach out to those superintendents and say, you know, we want to help. You know, we're here to give you a hand. To assist you. And we can get that message out, I think, pretty effectively for all the state parks.
That would be fantastic. I think anything that you can do. And then, you know, let's get you connected with, you know, Gloria Sandoval and and maybe you can adopt some of her, you know, her message points, or, you know, I mean, a little coordination. We can expand that messaging by both State Parks and CORVA and other groups. I think as much as we should get, as much as we can get out there, we should.
One last question. Go ahead. Who is this? Is that Jared?
Jared McLeod with Point Magoo. Yeah, I would say priority number one is to get our SVRAs open as soon as possible, you know, alongside with the guidelines and everything else you guys are dealing with. As far as dealing with the clubs, I think it should be, as far as the education process, it should be a collaborative effort between the clubs and local OHV groups like ours and many others. Mike McGarry is on the call from Cal Four Wheel Central District. They work with I don't even know how many clubs, dozens of clubs in their area, and I know the clubs will be willing to assist parks in the process of getting the SVRAs open, whether that's volunteer work or whatever that may be. And I would say also the education process needs to include the major local dealers like Clawson Motorsports in the Central Valley. Because the fact is, the majority of the people that are going to come to the parks that are going to be able to help you guys are going to be through the major dealerships and through the clubs. And it's got to be a multiple organization collaboration. It's got to be CORVA. It's definitely got to include Cal Four Wheel in the process because they represent, you know, I don't know, hundreds of clubs throughout the state. So I would say that's something to think about.
No, I think you're totally spot on. And maybe after tonight, Amy, with your help, maybe we could somehow create a list and a group of folks that, you know, we can try to promote that community outreach. You know, if we have the group contacting us, you know, at CORVA and at the division, then we can contact maybe the SBRAs or even maybe the BLM location, maybe like El Mirage, or and just kind of help them open that door, because I know sometimes I remember being a supervising ranger, you know, I was in the heat of battle almost every day, and when I had somebody who wanted to show up and I needed to, I was hesitant sometimes. I'm like, you know, I just don't have time, but with the division's help and CORVA's help, I think we could probably open those doors and get you guys through the door so you can kind of talk about, hey, this is what we can do for you. We can set up easy ups and have informational stations. We can pass out maps, or we can be spotters on sensitive areas. I mean, I can come up with a whole list of things you guys can do.
Well, that leads me into my question. So thank you, Jared and Brian. Now that we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, we're seeing ways that the community can contribute, and I think that'll help ease some of the frustration. If we start these efforts getting SVRAs open, is that going to help influence the federal partners? Because you talked about being in contact with the BLM. I've been in contact with Region 5. Everyone's kind of looking for this sign. And I was just curious if you think that would help get more opportunities open.
You know, I think we need to have that conversation at the same time. Again, we keep talking about the county health. It's really county health and like board of supervisors. If you notice that when people in a county are going to like a soft closure or they're opening things up, you know, they're going to mandatory mask use. You know, there's a process that each one of these counties wants to do. And then you've got the governor influencing, hey, I want to see this. So there's a lot going on. I think if we can get those introductions to those, you know, SBRA managers and maybe the supervisors, because I know the district superintendents are in the thick of it, we can start that conversation and say, hey, it's 3 weeks later, we've talked a bunch of times, and look, we're going to open next week. Hey, we're ready. You already gave me your list of thing, and, you know, a little bit of coordination. So I think, you know, I think with your help, Amy, and other groups, let's start coordinating. Let's come up with a phone tree. Let's come up with a list, and I will help open those doors at the different SBRAs. And then with the feds, I'd say the feds are just kind of waiting. They're waiting to see what the trend is because they are so low staffing. Normally what I've been seeing them doing is basically lock everything up. They don't have a fence around 100,000 or 500,000 acres, and they just kind of cross their fingers and hope because it's just so big and so little staffing. But like down at Jawbone Onyx, they're partnering with us because we bring in staff, they bring in staff. So, you know, as this thing starts to unwind, the Forest Service and the BLM, I think, will be, you know, calling us just like we're calling them to, like, hey, how are you guys doing this? This is how we're doing it. Hey, how about we do it together and we'll do a combined thing? Hey, I think I'll call the sheriff's office. You know, a lot of that's already going on, but I think as soon as it starts unwinding, that'll kind of be the pattern that we'll see.
Okay, great. Didn't mean to put you on the spot. Ken, if it's okay with you, we're getting to the end of our agenda. Now, a couple of these things, update on
yes.
Family fun run, we could do over
yeah, let's
over email. One, I was going to go, I wanted to put Nick Harris on the spot. I think he's still on here because he's really good at being put on the spot.
I'm still here.
Yeah, Nick would be just
yes,
the person to wrap this all up.
Yeah.
So,
Nick Harris, AMA.
First, I wanted a
question. Would you like to ask me?
Well, I wanted to thank you for working with us, and we've really tried to work together, set up some parameters for reopening, and it does take a certain amount of leadership to get this done. And how do you think we can work together to best accomplish this? I mean, what are you taking away from this meeting that we can go then and sort of get on tomorrow?
Well, as I think most people on the call know, a number of us, and Amy gets a lot of the credit because she started the process, but we've got a joint statement that we've more or less gotten finalized, I believe. And I have asked the group if we could hold off a little bit to release it, simply because AMA and MIC, which is the Motorcycle Industry Council, is kind of the trade group for the motorcycle manufacturers. And, of course, when I say motorcycle, I mean that's their name, but it's really side-by-sides, any sort of power sports. We have a joint statement coming out. I've been told tomorrow, there was, of course, as you would imagine, lots of I's to dot and T's to cross, but I was told tomorrow it's going to be coming out, and I was told that again today, so I'm sticking with that. So we were asked just to hold off, just simply so there's not like a couple of these things hitting the media in the same 24-hour cycle. But in any case, I mean, it's been a huge issue for us, as you can imagine. You know, as much as California truly has the majority of stuff, we deal with 50 states, and so there's a ton of different levels of communication, of regulations that have been put in place by different authorities. And, of course, you know, some places are having serious, you know, issues, and some places aren't having serious issues. So there's been a lot of questions coming into AMA. And, quite frankly, I think most people are understanding. I mean, we get and I'm sure all of us have gotten this, you get, like, an email that you could read that may seem hostile, let's say, but then you call the person or you respond to the person, and people seem genuinely happy to get a response, even if it's not the answer they're looking for. It's like, hey, you know, we know this is an issue. And in particular, the other thing I always remind people is you see stuff on a Facebook page or you see stuff in a forum or whatever. In particular, there was one in Illinois, and people were freaking out because the governor of Illinois had closed all the motocross tracks. And this was coming in, you know, in 9 different forms to the AMA in Ohio, and I got involved in the conversation. And I guess being an old skeptic, the first thing I did is read the governor's declaration, and there was nothing that said motocross tracks had to be closed. There was a number of motocross private tracks that had closed because they felt they couldn't meet the social distancing requirements, et cetera. But I think sometimes it's important to really go look at the authority that's being quoted as having done some, you know, egregious thing and say, well, did they really do that, or is that like one person said it and now it's become, you know, the rule of law, so to speak. And so when we pointed that out to people, again, it's not like they were like, that didn't make all the motocross facilities open, but it did get people to realize that, you know, you weren't singled out for anything. The requirement was simply, you know, like any other place, right? I was just reading about the requirements for some of the golf courses, I want to say, like by Lodi and Stockton, and there's some of them that are reopening, but, you know, they have a 50-item list of things they're supposed to do, and some of them clearly feel they can meet those standards, and some of them don't. So I think that's part of it. And then as Brian and I alluded to, I think as things reopen,
we're really going to have to work to get people to realize, you know, and when we were talking the other day, I kept thinking of like Prairie City or Hollister. If you announce tomorrow that Prairie City is going to be open on Saturday morning, and I don't want to see 10,000 trucks with motorcycles and ATVs in the back, you know, try to get in the gate. So I think we're going to, our chance to influence people in part is obviously to say, you know, maybe not loading up and driving 5 hours is a good idea, but also as things come back online, as facilities become reopened, realize that, you know, there's a whole process to that, and you may or may not be able to go out there. Actually, the El Dorado announcement that Ken just mentioned, I was reading the same thing, they even kind of touch on that where it says, look, you know, you're going to be able to go out there. There's certain things that aren't going to be available, trash service, you know, things like that. But also it says, you know, if you happen upon a place that has a lot of other people, you should go somewhere else. And I think, you know, as basic as a message as that is, I think it's important to get people to realize that the things reopening are not things, you know, as of last year reopening. I have a group camp that I go to every year, and this year it's the beginning of July, and we have a group site reserved, and we're really wondering if it's going to happen or not. So even if the forest reopens, people's expectations and this need, or BLM areas, whatever, need to be tempered to realize that, you know, it's not going to just automatically be the same as it was. The flip side being, I get it, that people feel like they want to get out, and I've heard the various debates about, you know, hospitals that are not overwhelmed in a lot of cases. I talked to a friend in Montana whose wife works in the medical field, and she said their hospital is empty. So I think that does, you know, I have not been riding, but I think at a certain point there is some truth to that, and so that needs to be part of the discussion because, I mean, where I live, we have 20 ICU beds in Placerville, and that's not a lot, but apparently we have not had a big problem. We had, I think the last I saw was 42 people that have tested positive, 37 of them are recovered. So the discussions have to include, you know, the reality that for whatever reason, you know, we've been pretty darn lucky and the Bay Area has just extended their closures through the end of May. So I think that it needs to be a kind of a multifaceted approach. But I really, truly thank, you know, Sarah and Brian for, you know, kind of leading us. And also the other thing, I guess, that has come up that I maybe wasn't fully aware of is how much authority the county health officials have. And the idea that the Governor Newsom or even, you know, your local mayor or somebody is making these decisions is not quite accurate. I mean, I guess at some point they're going to sign a piece of paper that says something, but the reality is the public health officials in your county are going to make those decisions. And, you know, I, for one, did not go to medical school, so I'm going to defer my personal opinions to those people that are experts in this field. And I would love to be camping and riding a motorcycle right now, but I just think, you know, I also have family in Seattle. It's where I'm from, and so I know what they've gone through. And the fact we haven't gone through that is incredibly good news, but it's not some proof of some, you know, horrible conspiracy either. And I guess I've heard a lot of that where it's like, come on now, you know. So anyway, I just think we need to continue to kind of get the message out that, you know, things are getting back to normal, and people need to be aware of that. But also when things like this El Dorado release come out, you know, making sure that the entire message is heard, not just, you know, the trails are open again. It's like the trails were going to be open anyway because this is just the end of the wet season closure. So that's enough rambling out of me, thanks.
All right, well, thanks. And I think the important part to take away from that is that all of us are working together for California. Mike, McGarity, and I welcome you to join our group too, and we need to be as cohesive as possible in California so we can move this along as quickly as possible. Ken?
Yes. Yeah.
8:57.
8:57. I got about 3 minutes. This has been a fantastic meeting. I'd like to thank all the guests that came online, our special guests. Thank you so much. Thank you, Brian and Sarah. The division, I think, and the commission are doing an excellent job. We have some issues, but you guys are doing the best, you know, a great job. Clubs, we're going to have to get out there and start getting involved with the managers and help them get everything opened up. And hopefully we can get back to some normalcy soon. But anyway, unless anybody has anything else, I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Can we not?
No, we don't.
You're not going to adjourn.
We're just
right.
going to continue.
I'm not going to. I was. You're right. I am going to. I'm going to. What was the word? I can't think of the word. We're going
to
put the.
I'd like to make a motion that we take a break, and come back 7 p.m. May 18th.
Okay, and that's Bruce Brazil. Terry, did you second that? Was that Terry Work I heard seconding?
I'm not seconding that, but I would like to ask everyone that's on tonight's call to please return on May 18th at 7 p.m. because we will be nominating and electing new members to the board, plus awards and things like that. So we need Corva members back on the call. So thank you again for being on the call tonight.
Well, thank you, Terry. Okay, so we have a motion from Bruce. Would any of the board members like to second that motion?
This is Jim. I'll second it.
All righty. All those in favor of taking a break, say aye.
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 All those opposed and all those abstained. Okay, motion passes. Everybody stay healthy and keep using, be reasonable. Use your common sense and have a great night. And thank everybody for being on the meeting, and we'll see you next month. Have a good night.
Good night, all.
Good night. Thank you. Good night.
Great meeting.
All right.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you, everyone, for allowing me to be on the call.
See you. Good night, John Boy.
Good night. Bye, Amy. Bye, Ken.
Bye. Everyone, feel free to hang up. You and me, Joe, and you, me, and Joe. That's it.
Well, I thought that went very well.
I think it moved along. When's the last time we had a meeting with 43 participants, including us?
Yeah,
never.
It's been a long time.
I think we talked about the issues that are most important to people. We talked about reopening, talked about Oceana Dunes. I mean, there are a lot of other issues we could talk about, but really everything is on hold. So we hit, we talked about Carnegie.
Yeah.
Talked about legislation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was a little snarky what Roberta texted me, so I...
Well, yeah, we do have our problem, people. Yeah. Terry Wark just, burns my ass.
I think he had good questions, and he did well. And, that's why I said, I said what you just said, are we all on mute? Are we even necessary to be here? And that's why I said it out loud and said, I think everyone's necessary to be here.
I don't understand that from her.
I don't either. And then she said afterwards, I didn't hear our names, sorry. And then I was checking the list and I realized they called in, because they dropped off with one phone and called in with another phone, but that one is unlisted, so it didn't come up with the number. And so... it just says anonymous, and usually that's Bruce Brazil. And suddenly I realized I had two Bruce Brazils on the call, but it was actually Jim and Roberta, so they were on the call. But I don't know how anybody can have any arguments about that call. I don't know how anybody could say that it wasn't informative, didn't have some of the best guests and information that you're not going to get anywhere else.
Nope.
I mean, who else was giving out information straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak?
Nobody.
And the only reason we got it is because we've built those relationships over time.
Yep.
People want to realize it or not. I did put Nick on the spot, but I didn't know what he was going to talk about. I thought it was kind of interesting what he talked about. People get a different point of view.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, a lot of people were sticking with the four-wheel drive. And I thought it was great to have Nick in there because then we included the motorcycle people.
Right. That was the other.
And we didn't go with leadership, but it also shows that we're serious about trying to get all the groups to work together.
We're reaching out.
Right. We're reaching out. We're being the good guys in this. Not that there's any bad guys. But great.
No, but I think it was worth it. It was worth it for Nick because he heard stuff that, you know, I know we've all been in contact with. I've kept in contact with Sarah and kept in contact with Brian. And I've got a meeting this week with Liz McGurk from Parks. But this way everybody heard at the same time. And
right,
Jim
right.
Sudi said he was going to keep it high level, which is fine.
Right.
I thought what he talked about was perfect.
Absolutely.
Couldn't have done it. So I don't know. I think we need to move to Zoom, by the way.
I do too. I wanted to bring that up. Is there any way you think we could get Zoom together by May?
Sure. Well, I think we can do it. You can get Zoom in a couple minutes. I mean, I have an account now. So.
Well, but. What about, you know, our recordings and our logs and all that stuff? Could we do that through Zoom?
Yeah, they have recordings.
Okay.
I'll double check. So Corva has an account now with Zoom.
Okay.
So that's first step.
That's the first step. If we can do this and still have all the conveniences of our call manager, I think it'd be a great idea.
Well, that's the thing with Zoom is that it's kind of automatically built in. So because you see everyone who's on the call, you're not having to guess who's on the call. They're right in front of your face, or else there's a little icon that says, you know, so-and-so, and you have to have the number for the meeting and then sign in to the number. So you're not. And it's by email address. That's what I was looking for. The only question I have is that is it fair for people who may live in areas that don't have access to internet as much, or do we really even have anyone like that?
I don't know, but we do have, you know, people like the Woods that are probably going to resist.
Well, what if we do both at the same time? What if we broadcast it on Zoom, but people still talk on their phone or something like that? I don't know. Maybe make a suggestion because, you know, Sarah brought it up. So that's the perfect idea to say, look, we've had other OHV meetings and we've had by Zoom and it's worked out really well. Or maybe we want to try it not for the annual meeting, but for the next meeting. I'm not sure. Well, what it does do is that because people can see you, it cuts down on the, I think it cuts down on the BS.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it does.
Because you look like an idiot.
Yeah, you won't have all the background conversations and that type of stuff.
No, I mean, you really have to look like you're paying attention. I mean, I had to constantly look if anybody was raising their hand or someone new got on or who they were. So a few people, when I challenged them, we had about three or four people when I challenged them and said, who are you? They dropped off.
Oh, wow.
So do you know why Bob wasn't on the call?
You know, he said he was going to be on the call. And then I've been emailing him today about the face mask. He wants those. The last email I got, he said he didn't know if he was going to be able to say much, so I don't think he was feeling very well.
So
I'll check in with him tomorrow.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think it was good. So
I think it was wonderful.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Care.
Stay healthy.
All right.
Nice hearing from you, Joe. Talk to you. Hopefully I see you soon.
All right.
Bye.
But, oh, if they do a tour at Fordyce, we have to go.
Yeah. So they're not going to do the trail, so we could just drive into the meadow.
Ta-da. I guess so. All right. See you soon. Bye.
Okay. Bye.